Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director of Communication Technology and Programs here at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we talked with Dr. Stephen Linton, founder and chairman of the Eugene Bell Foundation. The foundation is dedicated to treating diseases in North Korea, focusing on multidrug-resistant tuberculosis, or MDR-TB. It assists 12 treatment facilities in North Korea, supplying medicine and providing a treatment program. Dr. Linton and I discussed the Eugene Bell Foundation and its work in North Korea, the treatment program and prospects for fighting MDR-TB, and much more. Dr. Linton, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
To start out, could you please describe the work that the Eugene Bell Foundation is involved with and the mission of the organization?
Eugene Bell Foundation is a Christian charity that is unaffiliated with any denomination and is open for people of no religious persuasion. We have been involved in North Korea since 1995 when we were founded, and we provided food assistance for 2 years. And then the Ministry of Public Health asked us to focus on tuberculosis. We did tuberculosis work, regular tuberculosis work, for 10 years, providing medicine and diagnostic equipment and patient care items and that sort of thing. And then beginning in 2007, we began to switch over to multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. This is for people who have failed treatment with regular TB medications, people who require very expensive and a very difficult treatment process if they have any hope of survival. So at one point we were sending large amounts of regular TB medicine. Now we are enrolling individual MDR-TB patients who have been positively identified as having a mutant form of TB and treating them. At this point, we have about 1,200 patients.
So who is Eugene Bell, and why did you decide to name your organization after him?
Eugene Bell was a Southern Presbyterian missionary who came to Korea with his wife in 1895. And because of my own background, I also am the child of a missionary. Clearly, this is a very big part of my identity. We decided to call the organization Eugene Bell simply so that people could identify our roots. And a lot of people thought that the North Koreans would not like this because Eugene Bell was a missionary. But in fact, they seemed to appreciate it as well.
So Eugene Bell started off providing food aid and other services to North Korea. Of course, there are a lot of needs in the DPRK. So what sparked the decision to concentrate on tuberculosis?
One of the things that is different about a Christian charity versus, a human rights organization is that you only work by invitation. We were invited to provide food assistance. We were invited by the Ministry of Public Health to become involved in tuberculosis work. And we were asked later on to focus on multidrug-resistant TB. So our position has always been that we are a guest in the country at the invitation of the government and people of the DPRK, and therefore we seek to perform functions that we both agree on are important. In other words, they don't just assign us work. We agree, hopefully, we find a common ground in something that we think is important. And right now, multidrug resistance and tuberculosis is the most important serious health concern in the North Korea today.
All right. To follow up on that, can you talk a little bit more about the particular issue regarding MDR-TB? How bad is the issue right now?
Well, some scholars estimate that tuberculosis has killed more people in history than any other disease. 1 in 7. It's a highly contagious disease like a cold. Unlike AIDS or Ebola, it doesn't require physical contact. And so in many ways, it's much more dangerous. So it was a major killer up until the mid 20th century when some medications were developed that actually would treat it. Before that, rest and good food was about the only option you had. And so for a while, people thought that TB would fade into the distance, like some of the other infectious diseases have. But it's a very, very smart bacteria. It can hide in your body for decades and only appear when your immune system is weak. So that in many countries, like South Korea today, probably just about everybody over age 50 has had a brush with TB, and many of them have the bacteria living inside, waiting. So it proved to be a much more dangerous and much more chronic health problem than people expected. But because the incidence of TB went way down in developed countries who had access to the first line antibiotics to treat it, nobody paid much attention to TB. And all of a sudden, a couple of decades ago, health officials and caregivers turned around and realized that this bacteria had developed resistance to some of the major medications. These medications are now 50-plus years old, and there is a mad scramble to develop affordable new medications. And that's a big challenge today, because while new drugs have been developed, the cost of these medications is prohibitive. So I think in the 21st century, 22nd century, certainly TB is going to continue to be a major human health concern.
So you now assist 12 MDR TB centers in North Korea. How does the staffing work for those centers? Are you able to train local doctors to provide care there?
We introduce a program to an existing health structure. North Korea had a very vibrant and energetic TB treatment program in the late 60s and early 70s and built a network of hospitals and sanitaria that covered the whole country. And for a while, North Korea too thought its TB problem was under control. But when the economic situation became difficult, TB rebounded. And so what you have in North Korea is a system, and you have trained people without the necessary inputs in terms of medication and whatnot, and without a deep knowledge of multidrug-resistant TB. So yes, we have done some training on how to treat multidrug-resistant TB to institutions with existing staff and facilities. And so one of the reasons why our program is so cost-effective is that we actually are in close partnership with an existing health system.
Okay, and can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the centers that you assist? I believe there are 12 of them in North Korea now.
Our centers are in the western half of North Korea, beginning near the Yalu River, and one of them is actually in Kaesong. The only reason for that is that we are unable to meet the need for the whole country and therefore have limited our efforts to places where we can get to with relative ease and places where population density is high. Obviously, North Korea needs an MDR program for the whole country. By best estimates, at least 4,000 people develop MDR every year. Unfortunately, our best effort at this point is to enroll 1,000 new patients a year. So we're not even meeting the needs in our own area. And that's why our the centers we assist are, in a sense, located in where they are.
All right. Do you get a lot of people traveling from the places that don't have a center to your centers?
There's some internal movement for treatment, but it's difficult there, particularly because of food rationing or the food distribution system. Ideally, there should be a good MDR treatment facility in every province. And that's one of our goals.
If you could run through for our listeners the process for a North Korean who is diagnosed with TB, which may or may not be multidrug resistant, how do they find their way to one of your centers? What is the process for diagnosing, and how long do they usually undergo treatment?
Well, ideally, everyone who has symptoms of tuberculosis should be tested not only for TB, but for also multi-drug-resistant TB. And these tests are not expensive. There's a new piece of machinery out, a diagnostic equipment that is called a gene expert that will do this in 45 minutes. But at this particular point, this equipment is not available nationwide. And so what happens when someone in North Korea has TB symptoms? They go to the local hospital. The local hospital will do a basic test for TB, not for MDR. And due to significant assistance from the Global Fund, medications for regular TB are widely available. So that if you are confirmed to have TB, you are immediately put on regular TB medications, which these are relatively inexpensive, $20, $30 for 6 to 8 months of treatment. Once you've been through that treatment and are still positive, or perhaps you've been through it twice and they're still positive. Some of our patients have been through it as many as 5 times, which is not a good thing, and are still positive. Then clearly you have a problem. Ideally, everybody who fails once should come to our program, but we're not in an ideal situation as yet. So all of our patients, in other words, are people who have failed treatment for regular TB. So then we put them through a gene expert. And if they are confirmed to have multi-drug resistance, then we register them in our program. And the cost of our program is $5,000 a patient. So you have a jump of 100 plus. And that is expensive, and it sounds expensive, but MDR treatment in the Republic of Korea, South Korea, costs 10 times that much. And in the United States, it costs, on the average, $500,000. So our program costs per patient are actually 1% of treatment for the same disease in the U.S. and 10% of the treatment for the same disease in South Korea.
Over the years, you've been able to add more centers and reach more patients. Have you seen positive progress in the fight against TB?
Well, we don't do nationwide surveys. As far as we're concerned, it doesn't matter how many TB patients are out there. All we're concerned about is whether our patients have TB or not, whether it's one person or 1,000. But as I mentioned, according to North Korean statistics, and I think statistics that they've developed with the World Health Organization, we can expect that at least 4,000 people are developing this disease every year. And the problem is that if they are not treated, not only will they die when 2-3 years, but before they die, they will pass on a mutant version of TB bacteria to someone else. So I honestly speaking, would say that we're losing this fight so far. We have been able to do a lot of training in multi-drug resistant care. We have what we believe is a very cost-effective system. Our outcomes are not bad. The world average, including advanced countries, for the treatment of multi-drug resistance is 45% cure, which is really worse than a lot of cancers. Our treatment outcomes are over 70%. So we're not doing badly, but clearly a lot more has to be done if there's any hope of getting this problem under control.
And what are some of the major obstacles preventing that movement forward? Is it a matter of opening more centers? Is it a matter of providing more medication, generating political will?
We do not rely on government funding. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't take it if it was offered to us, but very seldom have we had that opportunity. So Eugene Bell, for the most part, operates on private sector funding from a broad spectrum. And right. Most of our funding comes from the Republic of Korea. Only about 10% comes from the United States. And while we have recently concluded a 2-year program to try to increase outreach in the United States, we're finding that it was not very successful. That support that we do have from the U.S. comes primarily from Korean Americans. So clearly funding is a challenge. Obviously, we're interested in raising one more dollar so that we can put more people on treatment. But I think that to have a nationwide program would certainly require some adjustments on the part of the North Korean Ministry of Health. But clearly, they're not interested in making those adjustments, like building new centers or exclusively for multi-drug resistance, until there's a pretty good chance that that funding would be available, because all of this is expensive.
How has the Eugene Bell Foundation maintained a long-term presence in North Korea, and how can other organizations learn from your model?
A lot of people, particularly in Washington, D.C., think that Eugene Bell is some kind of an exception. It's an interesting exception to the norm. But I would argue that it's really not an exception. If you operate the way a traditional Christian charity operated in the past, there's no reason why other organizations couldn't have the access and the reception that we have enjoyed. Doesn't mean we haven't had problems, but clearly working in North Korea requires remembering that you're a guest and also being willing to work long-term. Very little can be accomplished in a short period of time. And being willing to adapt your program to the realities on the ground. We live in the age where a sort of faddish globalism, and everybody therefore assumes that somehow these processes are all becoming uniform. I think that's a big mistake. And I think that our success relative to some other organizations might provide evidence of, in fact, that locally designed programs are probably not just in North Korea, but in other places as well, often more effective.
Because of the political environment in North Korea, I imagine there are some unique challenges to working there. What difficulties have you encountered, and have things gotten easier over time?
Well, there again, you're assuming that politics affects our work. North Korea is a very unique society with its own system. But I'm not sure that you can characterize that system as political. It's a social, it's an entire social, political, human, national system. If you are willing and able to adapt your program to that reality, then you do not have to be concerned about politics. We have been in North Korea when there have been incidences on the DMZ. We have been in North Korea and been invited or had our visas given us in times of particular tension in the last 20 years, and this is our 20th anniversary. We have never been denied a visa for political reasons. So I think rather than trying to be a player in the political world, I think the place for organizations like Eugene Bell is to provide basic human needs absent politics. And I think if I might say so, that some of our modest successes may prove that to be true in North Korea.
In what ways do you believe the Eugene Bell Foundation has been most successful in its mission, and where do you think there's still room for improvement? Do you envision the work of the foundation expanding to treat other humanitarian needs in the DPRK?
I'm sure that if we wanted to move into other areas, the North Korean Ministry of Health would consider it. I wouldn't ask to. There's far too much work to be done in tuberculosis. And if there is a different future, I hope it is a future where we treat more patients. Other than that, we have no particular plans. And in a sense, what our donors think about our program is probably more important than what we do, because they provide the money that makes it work.
How would you respond to observers that may be critical of NGO work in the DPRK?
I don't like the word NGO, because that assumes that there is primarily government, and everything else that doesn't fall into that basket is sort of an NGO. Western society didn't used to be this way. One of the characteristics of our current century and perhaps the 20th is that the government has expanded to absorb a lot of functions that used to be done by the private sector. And in a sense, non-governmental organizations have adapted to this reality. And in many cases, not only have been marginalized, but also been politicized. I think as long as an organization, a private sector organization, has a vision for private sector activities, in most cases, some sort of compatible, satisfying relationship can be worked out in North Korea. But if, as so many private sector organizations do today, particularly because of the popularity of human rights, as long as private sector organizations carry political baggage, they're going to have problems in North Korea. That's a long answer to a short question.
I think one thing that many people wonder, especially when we're talking about a place that is so far away and where the need is so great, is what can I do to help? As someone who has been doing humanitarian work in North Korea for some time, what do you think is something the average person can do to assist either your organization or other groups working in the DPRK?
Well, if you say the average person, meaning a non-specialist, then I think the opportunities are pretty limited other than to support financially people who do work there. North Korea is not a place for volunteers, as a rule. For tourists, maybe, but not volunteers, who are not dedicated long-term. The other part of that answer is that if you are interested in North Korea in a serious way, serious enough to learn the language, serious enough to learn something about Korean culture, serious enough to make significant personal financial sacrifices, I'm sure you can find something to do. But in a sense, North Korea is like a filter, and it has a tendency, in a way, of filtering out people who are not that serious.
Dr. Stephen Linton, I want to thank you for joining us today. We had a really great conversation.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Our guest today was Dr. Stephen Linton, founder and chairman of the Eugene Bell Foundation. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again next time on Korean Context.